Okay. Here we are, week 9. Provoke, evoke, or go home. It's really fun. I had the wonderful experience of being able to go up to the San Francisco Bay Area ICF coaches to do a live presentation of Provoke, Evoke, or Go Home. And it was quite fun. People were playful and open, which you never know when you're going anywhere, really. Although you do have a tendency to figure, okay, if they came to this, given the title, they must have some sort of openness or they wouldn't have come. Unless they were just purely contrarians. In which case, they were in the room with the wrong guy. Because I would provoke that all day long. So here we are in our 9th session. And I want to just sort of frame where it is that we're playing. And the recognition here is that this is a journey that has now become. You know, it's just starting. What I always hope to provide with a webinar like this or the Masterful Evocateur that's coming up in May or even an event is that I hope to provide some experiences in the context of preparation, meaning the mastery of this is not ever achievable in 9 sessions. But what can be begun is the process whereby you open up and begin to prepare yourself to really fully engage in the experiment and the ongoing experience that generates mastery. If you don't feel, so the context here then is that if you don't feel like you're masterful at provoking at this point in time, don't worry about it. Because it wasn't to be accomplished in 9 weeks, in 9 sessions. You know, it was to be an opportunity, an event of getting some tools and some ideas and some practice, perhaps, or the experience of it, so that you have a place to start that is a grounded place. You know, and in a sense, it's almost like the training wheels of masterful provocation, knowing that your ongoing mastery is going to be contingent on getting on a bicycle and riding it in various and sundry scenarios. Situations, you know, much like with a bicycle, like all of a sudden you're going to have to brake in gravel, and then you're going to have to brake in gravel on a turn, or ride through water and deal with that, or go on an uphill or go down a bumpy cross-country path, or brake at speed coming straight down, or making a sharp right-angle turn at speed. You know, the mastery of that doesn't come immediately upon getting on the bike. You know, the mastery comes on putting the bicycle and your riding into any number of situations. And every now and again, you may fall off and skin your knees. You know, but hopefully you have enough of a preparation for you to be able to pedal, you know, and ride on your own. And we'll talk about what we can do about that further to advance some of that. But that you can ride on your own and begin the journey of really diving deep into the connection that can then source the appropriate provocation at any given moment in time, even when you don't think it's provocative. And that's the next piece I want to give you in the context of all of this, which is some of the most innocent things you can say once you have the intention of provoking the barriers and boundaries may be experienced by the other person as extremely provocative. We don't actually know all the time what's going on over there. In much the same way that when you do a presentation, you don't know what is and isn't landing in the audience, even though you may be checking, you may ask, you may be being alert to watching what goes on for them, but you still can't know experientially what is going on for them. So you have no idea ultimately whether or not what you've done is planted a seed or initiated a catalyst. The thing to do is to be able to keep yourself clean and clear, and so that you can trust in your intention and that they have the same intention to be moved. And the combination of those two will presence whatever is available at that moment in time, even if it doesn't look like something's happened. And the reason I say this is that there may be any number of times over the course of your own coaching and your own interactions with people where you've said the most innocuous thing, and then years, months, whatever you want to call it, later the person goes, you know, I always remember what you said, or I hear your voice in my ear as I'm doing this, and you're going, really? That's what landed? You know, so we don't know ultimately what's over there. The only thing that we can do is play with our intention to do it, keep ourselves clean and clear, and then pay attention to what comes back to inform the next moment. As you may know, I coached rock bands early on in my career. And at a certain point in time, after one of the bands became very successful, I was looking to check in, as I did with all my clients at that time, and find out what it was that was of use for them, what was valuable. Because we spent quite a bit of time together. I would go over there once a week for sometimes 6 to 8 hours. And we did that for about a year and a half. And they paid for pizza and Cokes. That was when I was working for cheap. And transportation from New York City to Trenton, New Jersey. And so I asked them. I asked the leader of the band. I said, so what was really, you know, out of all of this time that we spent together in the coaching and all that stuff, what was really valuable for you? And, you know, I didn't know, but I had what I thought were the ideas of what might be valuable. And the thing that came to me that was probably, well, it was completely unexpected, was that he said, well, you know, the exercises we did were useful and all of that. Some of them were lame. I don't know what they really did. And I said, okay. Because I thought I'd been particularly creative, right? With some of the things, and I had this imagination that some of them were transformational. And he said, but the one thing that made a difference for us, for all of us, was that you believed in us when no one else did. And to this day, as I touch on that truth from him, I realize that the power of the interaction was not so much the mechanics of what went on, but it was the presence, where I was coming from that had the most impact on them. Because I never said to them, I believe in you, I believe you can make it. Never said those words in a year and a half, 8 hours a day. But they got it from me sufficiently strongly and persistently for him to be able to articulate it with that clarity. So I say that to point to that your presence with the desire and the intention to serve is far more powerful than whether or not you get the provocation right. Because it is that's radiating from you, the belief in them that they can, and that you two together can have a very transformational effect and have them move in a direction that is beneficial to their life in ways that are deeply satisfying and meaningful to them. And that you will even go to the lengths of putting yourself in developmental situations for yourself so that you can increase the service. Like courses like this, or whatever else you do. That what truly matters. The presence of where you come from about the coaching is far more powerful than the simple act of coaching. So before I move on, I just want to check with you to see how these things that I've just spoken are rippling or resonating out there for you.
This is Steve. Mm-hmm. Can I leave the call now? Because I don't think anything you're going to present is going to be better than that. I'm serious. No, I'm very serious.
Well, feel free.
The presence of the coaching is more powerful than the act of the coaching itself.
Right.
I mean, it's always, and I think deep down inside we know that, but for some reason we always get away from, all of us get away from the basics, the foundation, what I call blocking and tackling, you know, the 101 classes, and it's, that's, man, out of the 9 weeks, I mean, just taking that away from this was just huge, and I'm very serious about that.
Yeah. And, you know, we don't know exactly what is yet to be presenced to add, because it is my intention that you all get exactly what is here for you, whether we consciously can articulate what it is, but that it occurs because you all came to get something. Whether you know, and you may have had language for it on whatever intellectual level it was called for at that time, but we all came to have an event create something through us all. And the only thing left to do is to complete it so that if there's any little other particles of being that are to be presenced or shifted or adjusted, that we avail ourselves of the opportunity for that. Because, you know, I came simply to serve what it was that you all were going to invoke. And that's the other voke, you know, provoke and evoke. But to frame it from the point of view that your client comes to you and they invoke the coaching through you, like the Oracle at Delphi. They call, so to speak, the presence of the gods through you for the message that is most valuable for them. And that is, you know, that is your presence. And while they don't know it from the language, they're shifting out of being with you. So, yeah, I definitely appreciate what you've just said, Steve. I get it. Cool. What I would love is that no one has to be reminded of that presence, that it lands in each of you in such a cellular way. And I'm not talking, you know, smartphones with, you know, transmission towers. I'm talking it becomes so organic and irrefutable as where you show up from, that you actually don't ever forget it, even while you may not consciously focus on it. It becomes part of the air you breathe. Cool. Thank you, Steve.
Welcome. Thank you.
You're welcome. I would say namaste, but actually what's there is no mistakes. No mistakes. Who else? What's resonating for you and out of this conversation or this, you know, what it is that I've said earlier? How is that all landing with you?
Well, this is Shirley. I agree with Steve. It's really about, for me, it's about how I'm being and not about what I'm doing. And I'm in the process of, I just turned in my written exam for the COACHU certified graduate degree or credential certification. And of course, I've spent very many hours going over that and completing that. But at the end, as a part of the process, I realized what this journey that I've been on for the past couple years, and particularly at COACHU, what is opening up for me. And through the process of doing this exam, I was able to step back as an observer and make a note of what had happened with one of my clients. And it was, it really, I was sitting in a room by myself, and I was brought to tears because I realized that that I was just a witness to the work that she was able to do during the 10 hours that we had spent together. And so I'm really in tune with what you're saying. So thank you for just opening up another level of awareness and understanding from your perspective.
You're welcome. You know, I've often said to others who I've mentored, coached toward their credential at either COACHU earlier on or the ICF later on, that the credential in and of itself is, yes, it may have some meaning in the commercial world, and it's, you know, having more and more, but it's not the reason to get it. It's that it's a prompt for one's own development along that journey. You know, it's not about getting validation. It's about calling forth the excellence in you and your dedication to yourself and your growth and your development. And that's its real value. And while it does have value with respect to potential clients because it quiets their mind long enough for them to feel the chemistry between you, nevertheless, if anybody goes into an oral exam feeling like they have to prove they can coach, they're actually already in the wrong place. If you have to prove you can coach and you're going in the oral exam to get somebody to tell you that you can, your focus isn't where it needs to be. It still means there's more development because it still means the coaching is about you. The coaching in that moment, if you ever do an oral exam for anyone, is about the client. And so what happens in the oral exam is that you get the opportunity to shift somebody's life. Now forget about whether or not you're being measured about it. Just put your focus on that opportunity with what that person is engaged with. And put your attention there. It's like a free client. And you just go, wow, great, thank you for the privilege of getting to be able to participate in this person's movement in their life. I'm going to dive in. But if it's to demonstrate with any kind of energy of look at me, or that I'm going to be paying attention to what's going on from my own point of view about me, I'm not ready. And I've often said that there are two measurements of coaching. One is if you can do it in a room full of 700 people in front of them on stage and absolutely engage with the client to the point where you totally forget that those people are there and watching and are potentially judging, you're where you need to be because you're now so committed to that person's growth and well-being that the whole sense of self has been absenced sufficiently for the presence of the coaching that is to come through you to come. And the second thing is, is that I believe that a true measurement of the coach is that you can do it, that you don't need to talk about it. Because if you take a look at a martial art, if we were being measured like that, if you take a look at a martial art, the fact that you could write about and understand about how a roundhouse kick is done, you could tell somebody and write about the physiology of the body, of what's going on in the heart and the muscles and all that sort of stuff, and what the principles of gravity and the ideal technique would look like, matters little relative to whether or not you can deliver a roundhouse kick effectively in a sparring situation. Because the master that gives you your belt at whatever level is going to say, I see that you understand how a roundhouse kick is done. But you can't do one to save your life. I cannot give you a belt. So what I applaud for you is that awareness that it has been about the journey more than it's been about the certification as an outcome, and that's the point. That's a great way to approach it. Congratulations. So anyone else, anything else you want to share? And by the way, as you notice, you may, or may have noticed, there's whole meta levels of provocation going on here. So who else? Anyone else want to share anything before we move into today's opportunity?
Yeah, I do, Michael.
Yes, Molly.
Last week you made a statement at the end of the class of what we were going to do this week and to think about certain things. What, you know, mm-hmm. what did you gain from these 9 weeks and so forth? So I asked the question to myself, you know, and I really couldn't come up with anything that really hit me, you know. I mean, I thought about the myths and the beliefs and the stories and so forth, but I couldn't tie it together. And it was really scary when you started tonight. Like, you almost read my mind, that I didn't have to get it. You know, it doesn't matter. It's a beginning.
Mm.
It's, you know, it's the provoking of thoughts and so forth. And for me, it really is. I knew when you told the story about the rock bands, what they were going to say. I felt it.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't have to, you know, when they say in the competencies to establish trust, the way you coach is the way you establish trust, by being fully present with a client. And it doesn't have to be said. It's just there. People feel it. They get it. They know it. And I think, you know, for me, the passion that I have for coaching, that's really all I care about. I don't, you know, today I was in a lab class and we had to talk about toleration, since Clean Sweep and all these other different programs. And you know what I said? I said, I don't do any of them because I don't believe in them. And the facilitator said, boy, you've got moxie to say that. I said, I sure do. Can you believe that one? And I said, I do. I said, because I don't live my life with Clean Sweep programs. And tolerations is not in the dictionary. And I, you know what I call them? I call them things that bother me, that I have to deal with, things that I don't like. And I change them right away. But they're not tolerations. And I would never give my client a Clean Sweep program. When my client talks to me and I'm fully present, I hear what they're saying. I listen to them. I don't have to hand them a sheet for them to read and to tell me what's going on. They can tell me right from their heart. And that's how I coach.
Mm.
And so, you know, all that you're saying right now is really, it's so simple. But it's, for me, it's the only way that I know. And I'm finding out as I go along that when I am there to be that portal to, for that client, that it, the questions come. They come so much easier because I'm so engaged with them that I don't even have to think. It just comes out. It really does. It takes practice, but it does happen. And so, you know, like Steve said and like Shirley said, even if I can't take anything away specifically from this class, I think for the 9 weeks, the whole composite picture of it is a very strong essence for me, in that it all plays a part in the person that I am. And yeah. I make adjustments, you know, every day in that respect to who I am and who I can be to support that client. And I'm very grateful. I really am. I hate to see the 9 weeks come to an end, but it's really not an end. It's just another beginning.
Yep.
That's really what it is.
And you pointed to actually what the practice is. The practice isn't practicing on questions. The practice is on our presence and clearing out the presence, clearing out anything that obstructs or taints or impedes the presence. Yes, it is useful to understand the construction of questions, for example. But once you understand this construction of questions, I just go back to that description by Charlie Parker about how he plays jazz so brilliantly, and it just, you know, he says, I practice the notes, I practice the notes, I practice the notes, and then I forget all about that, and I get on the stage and I wail. And that's, you know, that is the awareness of looking at the construction of question, understanding what makes it is, what does it leading it with this do versus leading it with that do? What does it do? Once I get that, the work is on the practice of getting out of the way. So in the beginning, it may look like provocation is an artificial technique that we need to employ, and there's realms and that sort of stuff. And yes, it's useful for that in the same way that the Dalai Lama talks about it when he said one must learn the rules thoroughly in order to break them appropriately. Because it's not an either or, it is a composite. And it is a blending that makes it organic. And so yes, absolutely.
Each time it's organic, so that's what...
Absolutely. Absolutely. Very cool. So I'm going to move ahead. Thank you, Molly.
You're welcome.
I'm going to move ahead, and then we'll see what other opportunities there are. And this is what not to poke, and then some. So... we've been investigating the who are you now. We're going to take a look at the agility flow. Revisit provocation just a little bit. Three magic provocations. What, when, and who not to poke. Completion and what's next. Pretty simple. So what has changed in the who of you that will change the what of you? And I want to ask that question from some people who haven't answered what was going on at the top of the hour. What has changed in the who of you that will change the what you do? Who are you?
This is Sherry, and I was thinking about what's taken place and what's transgressed since we started, and I am just questioning every belief, and I'm thinking about how the beliefs were created, how I can deconstruct them, the busy big process to deconstruct them, and I've come to the conclusion that I really don't know anything anymore.
Wow! Awesome! Awesome!
Yeah, awesome.
Yes, you've engaged with a fundamental shift the one of coaching container and portal, but more importantly, the one of identification with self as one who knows versus identification of self as one through whom knowing can reveal itself. That's a big who shift. Does everybody get the distinction of that? One who knows versus one through whom knowing can reveal itself. It takes the ego out of the equation. Now, the ego is useful for all of us from the point of view that it is an aspect of the particular flavor that knowing is going to come through and be flavored by. And there's a distinction between flavored and tainted. Flavor is an expression of the uniqueness of you. Tainted is a function of the baggage and unresolved stuff and the other hooks and things that are part of us. But that shift is really a profound shift. And I expect that your ongoing experience of that is going to increase now that you're aware of it. It's kind of like when you buy a Prius. Now all of a sudden you notice all of them on the freeway and you just go, I didn't know there were that many in my neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing with this awareness that you've just come to.
Mm-hmm.
And the real joy of it is you actually don't have to know because you have access to the quantum field of information that has all the knowledge. All you have to do is take a moment to access it. Very nice. Anything else you want to add, Sherry?
No, I'm good.
Cool. Anyone else? What's changed in the who of you that will change the what you do?
Well, this is Margie. I think a big change in the who of me is being more of that blank slate when I have the conversations. It's probably pretty similar to what Sherry said. It just sort of appears to me a little differently. And with that, like I think of a call I had with a client today. I had no idea, you know, until she talked, what questions to ask her and you know, where we were going to go with it. And it was so free and was exactly what she needed at the time, it seemed, that it was fun.
Kind of like being a human Etch-a-Sketch.
Yeah.
For those of you who remember what that, you know, those things, it's like having the questions or the client, what it is that you're to speak, just show up on the blank page of the Etch-a-Sketch, and then when you're done, you shake it, and there's nothing there again.
Yeah.
And normally what happens is that it's more like, you know, like inadvertently writing with a permanent marker on a whiteboard. It takes a lot of work to get it off there. And so eventually the whiteboard gets cluttered with all of this stuff, all of these questions I've asked, these messages I've saved, and it's full. And we show up to the client with that full whiteboard trying to sort what on the whiteboard is supposed to be there. It's much easier to just leave this an Etch-a-Sketch and go, shake, okay, good, clean. What's next? I don't know. Let's see. And then it shows up, and then you shake again, and there it is. It also means that from week to week, you don't have to carry your memory of the client. Because they do. People go, well, I want to keep continuity. Well, they're already continuity. It's continuity standing in front of you. Your job is to coach who's in front of you, not who was there last week. because they're different. Cool. Let's keep moving. Here it is. This is the agility flow. It begins with source. Sensing acuity gives it direction and timing. That's the getting what's really going on over there. Provocative inquiry and saying what is give it shape and form. So here's some clues. If you're struggling with the shape and form, it's most likely an issue of not sensing what's calling completely. So stop and center, and even ask via Sanyama. If you're struggling with direction and timing, meaning you're not necessarily sensing what's coming, it's most likely an issue of presence. Stop and center. Use the gap in agape. Any questions there? Cool. Okay. So these are the players in the provocation game. The paradigms that constrain, myths that self-perpetuate and expand. You know? It's like, oh, he slayed a dragon, or he killed that snake. No. You know, miles away from the telling it was a dragon. Dragon fire. It was bigger than the village. You know, beliefs that could...
We're losing you.
Mind. Yes?
We're losing you.
That's interesting. Is this better?
Yes.
Your connection hasn't really been 100%. We can hear you, understand you, but has it been as crisp as prior weeks?
Hmm. Okay. And I'm not on the cell phone. I'm on a hardwired line. That's interesting.
Wow.
It sounds better now, but you were breaking up.
Right. Okay. So I'll revisit. Players in the provocation game are paradigms that constrain, myths that self-perpetuate and self-expand, beliefs that confine and constrain, perspectives that blind, much like putting blinders on a horse, mental models that imprison because they give us a picture of an entire world and then we simply live out of that world. Historical roles that obligate us to behavior, even speaking, you know, actions and speaking and just ways of being. And then stories that delude us, you know, from thinking that we're in reality or thinking about what reality is. This is...
Cutting out again.
So here's magic provocation number one. What if? Most people abuse this provocation in the normal world. They abuse it from the point of view of disaster scenarioing. You know, what if that doesn't, what's the worst case scenario? What if it doesn't happen? What if that goes wrong? How many people have you encountered for any high percentage of your life that say, what if that goes right? What if that goes better than you expected? What if it turns out easier? What if it's easier and requires less effort than you imagined? Now, at the same time, this is actually the what if, you'll see it in the next two provocations, magical provocations, is also a valuable lead-in for those as well. Magic provocation number two, always. What if it's always going to be like that? Now that will bring up some emotion on the radar. What if that's always going to be a challenge? Now what? Wow. Well, I don't want that. What if staying at that job is always going to produce an ongoing nightmare experience where you feel like the only way to get ahead is to stab someone else in the back. What if that's the way it always is there? Oh, I don't know that I want to spend the rest of my life doing that. Okay. You know, in a relationship. And this is one that is provocative in a lot of ways. And it's one that I actually wish, you know, and would hope for in one of the sort of like background compassion places for me, which is, you know, for women who are in a relationship where the man is a batterer. What if he's always going to be like that? He beats you and then he brings you flowers. Now, always can also be used in more positive scenarios. What if it's always going to be that easy? What if you'll always have friends? What if you'll always have clients? Always is a very powerful one, and on the other end of the spectrum, never. So you have what if, always, and never. To provoke something up on the emotional radar long enough for it to be noticeable, whether it's a C technique and radiating out from someone, or it's a core technique because it's in their body. Never is a great one when you're looking to have people shift from their attachment to something else completing them. You know, like they have to have a mate. What if you're never going to find a mate? Because they're so attached that their wholeness is a function of whether or not they ever have that guy or that girl. What if you're never going to be successful at that? What if your boss is never going to change? What if you're never going to be rich in the way that's important to you? Because part of it is that it disrupts the addiction to looking for a sense of happiness or a sense of completion outside of ourselves. And has us begin to relate with, well, guess what? You know, if that's never going to happen, okay, so how do I want to live my life? If that's never going to happen, how do I want to live my life? Does that mean that I will never be happy again? If that is taken off the table, will I never be happy again? And the reason we provoke with that kind of intensity is that a lot of people have that construct. They have that frame that says, I have to have that or I'll never be happy. Well, what if you never get it? Does that mean you're going to be in despair your entire life? That's pretty grim. And usually never will provoke an attachment. It's a challenging one. Now, I'm not saying I know that it will never be that way. Again, that's not the point. I'm not asserting that I know that it will always or never be X, Y, or Z way. However, what if it's never that way? Now what? Now, there is an extra little magic provocation, which is this is one for a special scenario. When you have a client who is constantly running a particular, whether it's a victim scenario or whatever the scenario is, that is a repetitive scenario, and you hear it over and over again, but the background sense that you have is that this is some kind of game that they play. You know, like if you have a client who repeatedly goes, "Oh, I'm never going to be good enough. I'm never going to make enough money. I'm never going to," and you know, like no matter what you do, it seems to just stick. Here's the next language tool. It's not even listed here. It's a simple phrase. You're right. Followed by, now what? And I found this one out early on, you know. So I had some clients in the rock band things who were saying, "Well, I'm never going to be successful. We're never going to make it." And I went, "You're right. Now what?" Because I had tried to, at certain times, I tried to encourage them, try to get them to see possibility, try to, you know, provoke it and tried to work with it. And it was just like, it was almost like they were more addicted to the game, and I had to break the cycle of it. I went, "Yeah, you're right. You're never going to be good enough. Now what?" "Wait, what do you mean? I'm just agreeing with you." It stops the game of it. Because some people will throw the negative piece out there as bait to get you to fill them full of positive. But it's a game because it's cyclical. And the game of it perpetuates living in that paradigm. "I'm not important enough," or "I'm not this," or "I'm not that." Okay. "I'm tired of playing this game." "You're right. Now what?" One of the places that it's really wonderful with is when they're talking about somebody else. And they're going, "He's never going to change. She's never going to get it." And you go, "You're right. Now what?" Because it's almost like they don't want to admit that the entire agenda is to get them to change. It's not that they themselves need to make a shift. It's that the other person needs to change in order for it to be okay. "Well, you're not coaching the other person, so that actually doesn't matter. So you actually have to take it out of that game." "Yeah, you're right. They're never gonna, your boss is a jerk. He's never going to change. Now what?" "I agree with you. What do you want to do from here?"
What do they usually say? I know they're all different. Is there any common response that they have? Or?
Well, not really. You know, they're surprised, first and foremost, that I agree with them. And then the second one is that, "Well, I don't know if I want to be here." Okay, now we're getting to it, aren't we? But see, the more we try to talk them into or around the fact that their boss is a jerk and that you can somehow find a way to work with it, or if you had some sort of magic key, you would get them to change, it's a silly dance. "Well, your boss is a jerk. That's the way he's built. He's never going to change. Now what?" What do you want to do about that?
But they want you to dance, right? And then
yes, because they're more interested in the dance than they are in doing something about it.
About it, yeah, exactly.
Because in the dance, it feels like they're moving. But they're not. They're basically doing a cha-cha in place. They're not moving around the floor. These are all things that they all came out of me, you know, like banging my head against the wall early on with clients. Feeling like I was an idiot because I couldn't. It seemed like, number one, at the time, it seemed like it was my job to get them to move, and I couldn't. And I just kind of went, and then most of these came out quite by accident in the moment, or by divine guidance, if you want to put it that way. One day I just said, you're right, he's an asshole. It's just like, okay, so now what? What are you going to do? So it does. It takes it out of the dance. It takes it out of that particular game. Because at a certain point, I know they want me to be there to provoke them out of the game. But there's a part of them that will play the game at times out of their conditioning because the fear of the unfamiliar or the fear that they're going to have to take an action that somewhere deep inside them, they actually already know they have to take, but they're reluctant to take it because of the unknown of the consequence of what will happen when they take it. It's almost like they don't want it to be brought up to the surface. In a sense, they don't want the curtain to be pulled away from Oz. They want to keep up and perpetuate the image that somehow something I can do will find a magic bullet that other person will change and everything will be okay. And I won't have to take the action or have the conversation that is both difficult and really uncomfortable. And I won't have to go through the exercise of shifting my entire life by getting a whole new job. I can keep staying in the dance. Meanwhile, inside, they're quietly dying. Death by a thousand cuts. Each interaction, one more little thin razor paper cut. They don't come to us to help them get more paper cuts. So let me just check in with y'all. How you doing with this?
Yeah, this is cool. Yeah. Makes sense.
Yeah.
I had a client do that last week. He basically, it was the first call, he says, you've got your work cut out with me. He goes, he basically said he's screwed up in all different areas. He said it a couple of different times. I'm not sure I could have said, okay, now what? But I asked him how long he'd been doing this, what he'd been doing, how long he's been screwed up, in his words.
Right.
Ten years. And I go, well, you know, sounds like you're doing a really good job at it.
How wonderful.
That's a Michael Stratford statement.
That's great. Sounds like you're doing a really good job at it. How much
longer
do you want to keep doing it?
By the way, to everybody on the call, I'm not an affiliate of Michael's, but I would strongly suggest you pick up his book if you don't have it, Masterful Questions. So. A wonderful book. So basically, I just came back to him. I said, okay, you know, out of all of these areas, what is telling you, you know, where you'd like to begin first with your, that's where we started, so. But.
Yeah, it's wonderful what you just did, and you know there's some delicious aspects to it, and you can even challenge them, like with things right up at the front, you know, as you did, and playfully, and you can also challenge them when somebody presents it their difficult case, and you're gonna have their work cut out for you. I could challenge them. What makes you think I want that? I mean, what makes you think that that's my ideal client? You know? Where on my business card says likes to work with people who make him their work cut out for them. certain point, it's like, aren't you tired of that behavior? Like, do you still have a whole lot more energy to perpetuate that? Because I know a couple of other people I'd be happy to refer you to. And when you're ready to actually move, call me.
All joking, you know, we're not making fun of anyone here, obviously. But what we're trying to do is, you know, invoke a pattern interrupt of some sort.
Yes.
Yeah.
If it's challenging, that it's an identification. I am a difficult person to work with. It goes back to the identifications. That's the paradigm. It's like, I'm sorry. I'm not interested in that. Just like I'm not interested in holding anybody's feet to the fire, putting their nose to the grindstone, I'm sorry, it's not attractive. However, if you're really interested in a move on this one, and a fairly quick one, and guess what? What if it was easy? What would you have to give up in order for you to not be screwed up and use that as the way that you get your sense of self? What would you have to give up? All of the attention or the taking care of that other people give you? Because we have to get down to the essence of it. If we're not, we're playing on the surface. And if they come to you, in a sense, guess what? They have been called to you for a particular piece of provocation. Even if after that one they don't work with you, it may have been that that piece in the interview or in the first session was exactly what they needed to get, even if they decide not to continue. All we are is a baton being passed in an inordinately long relay race. People's development is not solely, exclusively ours. They're with us for the length of time that they're with us, and then they move on to the next piece of development. If it's one session, if it's an interview, if it's a drive-by in a presentation, and you're presenting, and they come up to you, and they say something, and you say something, and that's it, and you never see them again, there it is. So, when not to poke. In a drive-by situation where you don't have permission, where there is possibility of public humiliation, without permission, so, Molly, is it okay if I share about the webinar, the ICFLA webinar?
Yes.
Okay. On this webinar I did for the ICFLA, there was a person on that call that I offered to do a little provocation coaching with. And what I got clear as we began to dance was that actually what would happen was a potential public humiliation if I poked in the way that I would have been, that would have been truly valuable for him in private. So I was clear that regardless of whether or not it looked like I was going to be perceived as masterful or not masterful in provocation, this rule superseded that, any concern, which I didn't have a whole lot of anyway. The key piece here is without permission. What not to poke are therapeutic issues and clearly identified no zones.
Michael, when someone does reach out to you in a situation like that in L.A., they are, though, you know, when they're putting themselves out there, dependent upon what they say, isn't there at some point where you can provoke something?
Yes, you can attempt to provoke what appears to be available to provoke, and apparently there may well have been some pieces that were provoked, maybe of a minor level, but the deeper provocation that was available at the time was not one that was valuable to put in public for him. And clearly identified no zones are not only things that people articulate, but things that you go, uh-oh, this is a no. I'm not going to go there. And that comes not out of fear that you couldn't go there if you felt like it or if it was appropriate to. A no zone is one that it is clear. A no zone isn't one that you're afraid to go into. A no zone is one that's clear that it is not to be gone into at this moment in time. Because they may not be ready for it, it may not be the time for it, it may not even be up to you for it.
What if you don't really know?
In the absence of clarity, what do you do?
You don't.
Yeah.
Yes, or you can, if you're masterful at it, you can very quickly go into the gap or sanyama to get clarity. And if you still get no clarity, then it's definitely no. Now, this is another part of it, which is who not to poke. Not just what not to poke, but who not to poke. People who you sense can and will hurt you if you poke them.
Well, those would be people you wouldn't have permission to anyway, I would imagine.
No, they may give you permission as bait. But they're basically laying a bear trap for you. Some people really get their joy out of, you see this online, trolls. They get their joy out of just doing some sort of provocation. However, there are people who will set you up to provoke them so that they can feel their sense of power by doing some harm. Once again, this is where the agility of sensing acuity, when your senses is really clear and clear, you see the radar in this one right away. And then the other people who not to poke, people who have actually asked you not to. That's an obvious one, but we don't necessarily always pay attention to it. We sometimes override this one, especially with people we're in relationship with. So, here's the completionaire. Three questions to consider. What have you gained, which is more than just learned. We've talked about this. Here's the question I have for you. And I'm going to try and find, if you are, reconstructing your Legos in the background, please put your phone on mute. Thank you. Because I'm hearing, it may be typing. Sounds like if it is, it's on an Underwood, one of those old stand-up ones that I learned to type on. So just put your phone on mute temporarily. Okay, great. So what have you left behind forever? And what is the new sense of self you will live from for this moment on? You can answer any one of those. We've mostly talked about A. You can talk about B or C. David, you're on the call, yes? No?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Okay. Yep. Okay, so I just invite you to, since I haven't heard from you on previous parts of it, if you want to speak to either B or C at this point in time.
To speak to B or C, let me check.
What have you left behind forever? What is the new sense of self you will live from for this moment on?
C definitely hits me well. The new sense of self is definitely, the limitations, the self limitations, mental models, beliefs, stories, paradigms. Through this course, I definitely I was blown wide open. Like, you know, you do trainings and you do work on yourself and to develop the coaching skills. And it's funny when you get to I sometimes get to a point of complacency. I'm like, yeah, I know this shit. And I don't, man. And last week, especially with the roles, it was, I had eye openers. I felt like every lesson, but last week was like, wow. Picking and choosing the roles, and just how we all make it up. I've heard that before, you know, but I forgot about it. It wasn't in my being. It had escaped my being somehow, and that reminder was really vibrant and awakening for me.
What's going to have it go cellular on you instead of it's something you have to intellectually remember?
Yeah, good question. Just got to tune in, man. I got to connect in.
Okay. And what's going to keep you from that?
Trying to gain more knowledge, more information.
Beautiful. You get the identification with the data. So somewhere along the line, the identity was constructed where if you know more or know a lot of stuff, then you'll be either valuable or valid, or that is your strength or gift or whatever it is that you want to give to the world.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm gonna just put this one right on the table. You know exactly what I'm gonna sell you. Who gives a shit about your information? I don't care.
Yeah.
Your presence is what makes a difference to me, and your information is a dime a dozen. I can look it up on the internet any day of the week.
Yep, agreed. Yeah, absolutely.
And even the information about that is useless until it drops into your body.
Mm-hmm. Right. Trying to remember this conversation as an example.
Pointless.
Exactly how it went. Yeah.
Exactly. So the shift is a recognition that regardless of how smart you are, that ain't the best thing about you.
Yeah.
And you've gotten a lot of juice. I get it. You've gotten a lot of juice from being a smart rat in the room.
That's right. I've gotten a lot of praise.
Yes. But what I want to tell you is, in this moment in time, is that it's cotton candy.
Yeah.
It is not and never has been nurturing your soul.
Yeah.
It's been feeding your ego, but the soul is starving.
Michael, are you saying that when you let that go, that then you're able to allow to be fully present, to let other things in?
It's saying that it's a prison to identify ourselves by what it is that we think we know, and that it misdirects what can come through. But more importantly, the being suffers when it thinks its value is the information and its intelligence.
So when you're fully present, you let that go.
Yes, one could say that from the outside, that's what it looks like. What it's really endorsing is that you had an impact of presence long before you had intelligence showing itself. You profoundly affected the people around you, even before you could articulate a sentence. So I just want to check in with you, David. How did all that land a minute ago?
Yeah, that. Thank you for that, because it's, for me, and I think a lot of people, a lot of times it's, well, I need a reason for somebody to like me. I need a reason. I need to know why. Well, there's this sense or this pull towards, I need to know why. I need to know the information. And it's just like a soul-sucking game.
Yep. And even knowing the information that it's a soul-sucking game won't save you.
Say that again.
Even knowing the information that it's a soul-sucking game won't save you.
Yeah. Yes.
This is a deep give-up-the-identity quest.
Yeah. There's a lot of back and forth in my body right now.
I'll bet.
Michael, this is Shirley. What is coming up for me is that it's walking the talk, just talking the talk. It's being able to walk it and be it, as you said, on a cellular level.
It is that. And the trap is understanding that it's that. Because understanding it is part of the you can't get there from here. We can understand everything we want to understand about sex. It's got nothing to do with the experience. So yes, it is about the being level. And that's a subtractive process. And subtracting the identity that is fused with one's intelligence or creativity or whatever is one of the bigger challenges we face. Thank you, David, for that opportunity and opening.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
And you're welcome. Sorry. You're welcome and thank you.
Cool. Okay, so let's see. Anyone else have any other new sense of self you want to live from for this moment on? Which, by the way, I had no idea where we were going there, but that was what was there. Or what have you left behind forever? This is not a trap question.
This is Emilia.
Yes.
Yeah, answering the question, the person I'm going to leave behind forever is the person I used to know. That's me.
That's great. Thank you, Emilia.
That is great.
You're welcome.
The person you used to know, or even the person you used to think you were. Wonderful. Who else? Anyone else want to share either one of those? Not required, just an invitation.
I think the person that what I've left behind is the person who I sometimes think I should be.
Oh, sweet. That's got to be freeing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Way cool. Anyone else?
I left behind the fixer.
Yay! 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 How wonderful. on so many levels.
You have no idea.
You're right, I don't.
Oh.
That's great.
To tell it. But they're all gone.
Oh, good.
Now I have to fix me.
Maybe you're not broken.
Maybe I'm not broken. I was just going to say, maybe I'm not fixable. What if?
Maybe you're not fixable.
Right.
Maybe you're not broken.
That's right.
What if you're right?
Yes. That's it. We know we're making it where we can be playful with this stuff. That's great. See, now everybody may be just coming under the... I'm going to have a new agility. It's going to be called Frisky. Anyone else?
Well, I was just going to say, see how much fun we have when we let go of all that other stuff and that baggage.
Oh, yeah. Because that's actually all that there is, really. I mean, when people talk about enlightenment, really, let's go back to it. It's not enheavyment. It's not enseriousment. I'm going to be enlightened, but I'm going to be very serious about it. That operative word in the middle of that is like.
But, you know, there's a beauty in it. And the beauty is that we can have a discussion like this and change, and we bring that enlightenment to our clients of who we are, our attractiveness.
Absolutely.
It's permeating our whole being.
Yeah.
And we come with such a different perspective of life, not heavy, you know, light and play that game and enjoy.
Yes, because you know what? There are moments they're going to feel heavy already on their own.
Right.
They don't need us to make them more significant than they already are. They already have their own attendant significance. We don't need to add significance to a significant event. In theory, that's what makes it look like melodrama. Or the Desperate Housewives of locale of choice. Cool. Okay, so
Michael,
just a couple. Yes.
What just occurred to me is that the more baggage we leave behind,
yep,
we allowed the client or people around us the opportunity to also leave behind those baggages. So
yes.
There's a lot more.
That's actually a natural consequence. We become a virus called No Baggage Sanus.
And that will be like one definition of enlightenment, that you're more light.
Yes.
More complex.
And when we are, they become, and when they become, they in turn affect those around them. It's contagious in a good way.
Yes.
Very cool. So coming around the home stretch. Oh, what's next? Actually, those dates are wrong.
I guess so.
Masterful Evocateur, The Art of Calling Forth Genius. I'm not even sure the price is right. I didn't even look at this slide. However, it is up on the website. Oh, man. Okay, good. That slide disappears. All right, that one's done. But the real point of it is that Masterful Evocateur is coming in May. And it is 9 slides, and there are 7 things to call forth. Because once you provoke the boundaries and limitations and constraints that people wrap around themselves as part of their identity of who they think they are, now you get to call out people. Call forth who they really are. Call forth their greatness, their singularity, their genius. Call forth their desire, their clarity, the natural, aligned, appropriate action. Call forth all of that stuff. And It is a self-contained unit. There is no prerequisite. Anyone can attend. So if there's other people that you think would come have fun with us, that we could enlighten, you know? And there will only be one timing. So it is up on the website, Masterful Evocateur, under webinars. It's actually in the store. That's the place to go, under michaelstratford.com, in the store. I know, because I actually did my own WordPress stuff to get it up there.
Great. Michael, I have one quick question.
Okay,
how
is this true
or false?
Yes?
How long will the tapes be available for us to download?
A couple weeks.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, Diane, listen, they'll be up at my website. They won't be, I think they'll disappear from instantteleseminar.com within a week. But they'll still be up at the private page for a couple of weeks there.
Perfect.
Okay?
Thank you. Yep.
You're welcome.
Michael, you know the radio show that you did, you don't have that on your website, do you? The download for it.
Not yet.
Okay.
The radio show, the coaching perspective one?
Yeah, with the two women.
Wired for Success TV.
Yes, it was wonderful.
Oh, you listened to it. How wonderful.
I did, yeah.
Yes, they gave me the code so that I can embed that on my site.
Okay.
Yeah. I've been up and out there. Essentially, what Molly's pointing to is that some people from the UK found out about me through Tom Stone, and they did a one-hour interview with me on all sorts of things. And we went all over the place in a really delicious meander.
That was wonderful.
And it's called Wired for Success TV, or .tv, I think. And Beryl and Mel are quite wonderful people of bringing transformation into the world from many different voices, which is great. So they have on-camera interviews with a lot of people, and they're really dedicated to it. It's fabulous. They're a delight to be with. So I'm in the process, and this is just something I invite you all to share as a frame with respect to your business. I'm in the process of finding as many opportunities as I can to make it easy for people to find me, which is different than going out and chasing business, isn't it? It's really about making it easy for people to find you. And then if they want you...
Oh,
and
it looks so close.
Mm-hmm. So here's another What's Next, the Be Yourself or Die Someone Else experience, which is actually it's a 2.5 days... session. First day is 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. Next is 9 to 5. And this is, it does come with four webinar sessions. It's taking place at my house. I have 10 seats available. And that's this is really about steeping yourself in your uniqueness in a number of different ways so that what happens is that you walk out and you now then get to leverage and express that full, clean sense of you in a powerful way. And you would be required to bring something that is memorized, a 2 to 3 minute presentation, because we're going to tap into part of your uniqueness in the expression. It would be about something that you are passionate about. So it could be a poem. It could be a point of view, a message in the world. It could be lyrics to a song that you want to speak or sing. It could be a monologue from a play, a chapter from a book, or part of it. 2 to 3 minutes of memorized material that we're going to use as an exploration for connection, for the expression of you. So it's not about whether or not you're a great performer. It is about if you're going to be you, you might as well put it out there. And we just need something as a medium. So that's that. If you have any questions, let me know. This is the real key piece here for me, which is thank you for your willingness, for your participation, but mostly for your ongoing intention to serve the world. You know, the heart is really where we come from when it is that we engage with our clients and with each other. And it's valuable to stay connected to that as deeply as we can, because as the source or the funnel through which presence comes through us, it comes through our heart. And then my special thanks goes out to my wife, Carly, for all her support, especially with technical stuff, which I'm now, she's supported me so well, I'm now taking over certain pieces of it because she's been great at training me. Yikes. So I leave these last few moments to you to articulate whatever, if anything, you feel you want to say, simply to have you work from completion for yourself. You know,
Michael,
knowing that completion is simultaneously an ending beginning. So, for any of you, what, if anything, do you feel you need to say in order for you to feel complete with this experience as it's presented to this point in your life?
This is Shirley. I just want to thank you for your presence. Your presence on this call, your presence on other calls, because as a result of my having the opportunity to be in your presence, then I'm able to access my present and then share it with others. So thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, this is Margie. I want to first to thank Shirley for pointing me in your direction, Michael, and to thank you for not only this class, but the other work that we do together, because truly there is some transformations happening with all that provocation.
Great. You're welcome. Who else? Anyone?
This is Herminia.
Yes.
Yeah, I also would like to thank Molly for giving me the information about you and for attending all these calls. I have shattered the person I used to be. And I'll keep on chatting that ego, identity, and all these things. And the journey is just beginning. And I'm really grateful. I'm looking forward to the next courses that I'll do with you. Yeah. And thank you so much for everyone else who attended this call and the other calls.
Anything hanging out there for anyone?
I just want to say thank you. There are, I don't really have any way to articulate how I feel, how much my life has taken on a different path for my journey. And I feel like sometimes I plagiarize you in that I have to learn to say that I once heard someone say this, and now these are my words, because I feel that, you know, people get tired of hearing sometimes what I say. Not that I care, because I keep on doing it, but I can only say thank you. I mean, I believe that there's a reason why you came into my path, and I don't know what that reason is, but boy, it's one of the best reasons that I can, one of the best things that ever happened to me. And I'm ever so grateful for having you and being able to be part of anything that you do. Anything. It's just a joy. and it really broadens my thinking. It's challenging, and hopefully I'm a better person for it.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much for all of your advocacy. The energy of your advocacy is, I constantly feel it as a background beingness. It radiates from you. So
I can only do what I believe. I can't be anything that I'm not. And I feel it, and it's what you are, and what you give so much to everyone. And I think you have to hear that and know that, because I just believe that you're something. You're a very special person for us in the coaching community and outside of that coaching community, because you're genuine. So I thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Hey, Michael, it's David. I just want to say I'm so glad as well to have crossed your path. And from when I first saw you boldly stating exactly what you felt, thought on the LinkedIn forums that led me to meet you in Denver and then to do this, I just followed it, and I'm so glad I did, without thinking, really. And I really want to thank everybody on the call for diving in fully, showing up, exposing those raw parts of ourselves so I could see that in me as well. So much from you all that participated here. So thank you.
That's nicely said, David. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. So thank you all once again, because it is all of your collective participation and energy that makes this call. It informs it, it shifts it, it invokes what is to come through in my conversation. It evokes and provokes with each other. And it is your uniqueness, each and every one of our uniqueness, that has flavored this stew. And we can't go where we have gone without each and every one of you. So, thank you. And who knows where I'll see you next again to play. I'm doing the Provoke Evoke in Seattle and then in Portland on the Provoke Evoke tour. And then we'll see what else is going on. I'll be bringing the Agilities out as a webinar, but also as an event. And who knows who will decide to come to play when and where again. Just every now and again, check into my calendar. I won't do a whole lot of heavy marketing to you. I will let you know every now and again what I'm up to. But I believe that when you get informed of what I'm up to, if it calls you, you'll come. And if it doesn't, then it's that it either wasn't time or wasn't for you at all. And I absolutely respect your sense of the match of that. So I will connect with you in spirit, if not again in person, in future. And let's see where it all takes us. Bye, all.
Okay. Bye.
Thank you, Michael. Bye-bye.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye, all.
Bye, everyone.